What's going on, guys? Welcome to the latest episode of Can I Kick It? Brought to you by Elliot and Shanair. I was totally about to mess up the intro because I thought we were doing River City 93. God, yo, that tells you we do too many podcasts weekly and that when you start messing up intros.
Yeah, we're always flipping back and forth.
The thing is, I was practicing the introduction before the show started. And it still messed it up. So, congrats to me. But, man, I'll let you introduce yourself to the audience if they haven't heard your wonderful voice before.
Yeah, it's Shinya Duran II. Here for another episode of Can I Kick It? I'm excited because this is going to be a good one.
Yes, it is. And on this episode, we are covering the legacy of Miss Brianna Scurry, who... For all I knew of, only thing I knew her was for the 99, World Cup win. But there's a lot more to this story that we don't know about.
There is a lot more.
There's a lot more.
A lot more.
So where you want to get started at with her? You want to start off at the very beginning and work our way to present day, like we normally do?
Yeah, let's go chronological.
Chronological. So for Miss Brianna Scurry, there's a couple of key points that we got to highlight first. Like, she was a starting goalkeeper for the 95 World Cup team. She's also was a founding member of the WUSA, which, to my recollection, correct me if I'm wrong, that's like the first women's league here in America, right?
Yes, that was the first women's league. That's when things got kick-started for the women's league. I remember when it was... You only saw the games on PAC TV.
Oh, God. And, all right, so she played... 3 seasons for the Atlanta Beat, which, by the way, side note, Atlanta always has like the best nicknames for teams. I feel like, they always hit.
They always nail it, especially for the soccer teams, for anything. I mean, for like literally anything, they always get the right names.
Yeah, they get the right names. We just need the Braves to change their names to the Hammer and Hanks. And we'll be straight. That's a different story for a different day. But also, here's a little bit about her record as a goalkeeper. She's made 173 appearances for the U.S. Women's National Team, second amongst female goalkeepers all time, 15th amongst all American players, and 32nd amongst all women, period, to play the game. So 173 appearances is like insane. And like, when we get further into her career and you realize there's like, I think there's almost like a 5-year gap, you'll realize where all those appearances are racking up from. But 173 as a goalkeeper, like, that's crazy.
Another thing, I mean, of course, this also shows the prowess of the U.S. women's national team. But of all of the games that she started, the record is 133, 12, and 14.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. That's an insane winning rate with 71 shutouts. Like, she was a beast in between the sticks. She was a monster. I remember seeing her. It's like she didn't let anything in.
No, not at all.
You had
so
to work hard to get a ball past her.
she was pretty unstoppable. But this is the thing. Like, she started off playing goalie for Anoka High School, that's up in Minnesota. I hope I'm saying that right. But she started playing off there in Minnesota, where she won a state title, but she was also a multi-level athlete. Like, she did track and field, she played basketball, which the basketball part we're going to dive into a little bit later after this 99 World Cup. I can't wait to tell you about this story. You're going to laugh. But then she was also a high school All-American and Minnesota's top female athlete. Like, she was heavily recruited coming out of college because she was one of the best athletes as a goalkeeper.
Yes.
And then she went to your neck of the woods, University of Massachusetts Amherst. Now I'm going to ask you, where is Amherst?
UMass.
That's all I hear. Is there like multiple UMasses?
Yes, there's UMass Amherst, UMass Lowell, and UMass Boston.
Oh my God. Why are there so many?
I don't know. That many. And I feel, and it's basically each one has more of a proficiency for a certain field. Like, for example, UMass Boston has a much better business school than the others. Amherst has a much better engineering school than the others, and stuff like that.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, they got three UMasses.
Well, she went to US Amherst, and this is also a part of her little, like, shutout record. They said, like you said, she has 71 as a professional. Well, it kind of pretty much started for her in college. She had 37 shutouts and 65 starts, and she had a career record of 48 wins, 13 draws, and 4 losses. Oh, by the way, she only gave up a half a goal a game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, man.
So in 93, she led U.S. Mass to a national semi-appearance and also to a pair of A-10 titles. Girl was dominant.
Yes, definitely.
Yo, imagine only giving up a half a goal a game. Like, I don't think I can do that in a regular game.
I mean, there are not many goalkeepers on the professional level, high profile, that can boast that type of record. Not many at all.
Not at all. Like, think about what has to go into, like, you seriously, you have to be in the zone. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure you played goalkeeper before, or like any kind of defender. Like, at a certain point throughout the game, you get in the zone where it's like no one can get past you. But to be on that kind of level consistently, is next level.
Yeah,
it's next level, which is crazy. So back to her back in college. She was named National Goalkeeper in 93 by the Missouri Club. She was second All-American, and then she got a whole bunch of All-Americans after that. The list is just super long, and I'm not going to read through the list because we'll be here for 20 minutes. Like, yeah, I'm not reading that whole entire list.
Yeah, the amount of honors that she's gotten in college alone has just been is a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot, man. So a little bit before her playing career, I don't want to talk about her playing career before we hit the international career, because I feel like everyone knows her for her international career. Because, I mean, and this is something we can talk about as well. When it comes to, like, women's national team, like, the bulk of a lot of women's career, I feel like from 95 to really 2006 is national team. There isn't a whole bunch of playing in a professional league unless you go overseas and you're playing in, you know, Sweden or Norway, maybe France. You know, I don't think England was really developed like that, or they weren't really getting a lot of Americans. So a lot of it was you're playing for your national team day in, day out.
Yeah, that was – it wasn't – there weren't really too many leagues around the world that were really worth playing for in terms of financial, you know, income and whatever. I mean, it's one thing to go and play for a club, but if it's not providing you with what you need to live, I mean, there's no point in traveling all that way. And then not only are you playing, you got to go find a job there, you know? So most of these players, they were just playing for their national team. That was it. National team, a lot of them maybe coming out of college to play for their national teams. I know there were a lot of foreigners who were playing college soccer in the United States, but would go and represent their countries, you know, on the national stage, on the international stage.
So, like I said earlier in the podcast, she was a founding member of the WUSA. But this is a cool note. This is the first professional league that played women as pros here in America. Yeah. So we're finally playing them as pros. Still got to pay them, you know, a little bit better, folks. Let's get with the times. Yeah. but she played 3 seasons for the Atlanta Beat. And she was the starting goalkeeper for them, of course. She got to the 2 championships games. She didn't win those, however. But she was named the league goalkeeper in 2003, which was also the last year of the WSA. So the last year of the league, you go out as the best goalkeeper in that league. And it only stayed around for 3 years, so.
Yeah,
it wasn't really that stable, but it is interesting to note there were a couple of teams that you kind of see went into, I think, the WPSA, I think that's right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now the NWSA, like the Boston Breakers, Atlanta Beat, it was one more team. I can't remember their name at the top of my head, but it was a couple of team names. Like, oh, Washington Freedom. That's who it was. Yeah. Who now Washington Spirit. I guess I don't know if the two clubs are linked, but I guess it's the precursor. But in 2009, and this is another thing too, we can talk about this. But in 2009, she did return for pro soccer, but it was kind of cut short in preseason with the Washington Freedom, with the Women's Professional Soccer League. She got a career-ending concussion, cut her career short. She called it a day after that. She was like, I'm done. But that's weird to see. Like, in 2003, she was the league's best best goalkeeper, or you could say best player. And then there's a six-year gap of her not playing any professional soccer. 2009, she doesn't even make it into the season. She gets a concussion in preseason and calls it a day. And it's just like, what is this six-year gap for this amazing goalkeeper to not even think about, I'm going abroad, or, you know, U.S. soccer to be like, here's a domestic league for the women to play in. Like, it kind of opens up this door to so many other questions and things. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's that difficulty that you saw with the women's game. Players just not having that outlet to be professional athletes. There weren't a lot of options in terms of where they could go to play and make a living playing. I guess you can say that around that time, female professional soccer players was a new thing, and it was still finding its legs, so to speak. And because it was still finding its legs, there weren't that many options. There weren't that many opportunities for even some of the greatest stars to be able to, you know, find a way to get clubs and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's also one of the things that makes you think more about the feat that the women end up in those early parts of women's soccer. Like, it's amazing how dominant the women's national team was. I mean, granted, you know, also Germany was dominant at Paris, Brazil as well. But for not to have, like, a home domestic league, but yet you had the likes of Mia Hamm, you know, Brianna Scurry, the legends like that, and also have Amy Wambach come through the ranks without a dominant, you know, domestic league. It's kind of weird. Like, you will never see that in the men's game. Like, you will never see that in the men's game. But it just also means, like, the level of athlete here in America was on a different level, to where it was like, yeah, we don't have a domestic league, but we're still going to win these Olympic golds, and we're still going to be dominant in these World Cups. And that's crazy to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, the power that the U.S. women's team has garnered, and the general, what word am I looking for?
By the way, folks, Shaneer is in his closet, and he's doing a great job of, like, not trying to hit his clothes off the rack.
Yeah. I mean, look, hey, when you got a two-year-old, you got to find us some noise-canceling space. So, yeah, that's – you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, I mean, with the dominance that the U.S. women's national team had, it's interesting that it came about because of the fact that soccer wasn't taken as seriously in the United States. Because there wasn't a lot of money being put into the men's game, it was a lot – in a lot of the common people's minds, soccer was a girl's sport in the United States for a long time. And I remember going through that period of time where whenever you saw a suburbia family on a TV show or in a movie, the son was playing football or baseball and the daughter was playing soccer, you know? And because of that, there was a big female soccer culture in the United States, much bigger than elsewhere in the world, where you go to England, France, Brazil, Argentina, Germany, anywhere in Africa, if you're playing a sport, you're playing soccer, basically. So there wasn't as much attention given to girls and women in the soccer realm in other countries mm-hmm. as it was in the United States. So USA always got that jump start ahead of everyone else with the women's game. And now you're looking at a situation where, yes, they got that jump start, but it's still considered, oh, that's just a girl's, that's a girl thing. It's a girl thing. So we're not going to put money into it. It's not going to make money. It's not going to bring revenue. And because it's not bringing revenue, you have amazing stars like Breonna Scurry who will go through periods where they're like, I don't know where I'm playing right now.
Yeah. So. And there's also that thing about, like, I've heard this argument before of, like, people don't watch the sport, so money isn't invested. Money isn't invested because people don't take the sport serious. People don't take the sport serious because people don't watch it. Like, it's always that weird, like, convoluted circle of, like, oh, this is why. It's always that excuse circle, I'll call it, of, like, why we don't do X, Y, and Z.
Well, and my whole thing is... The element that's in, that needs to be recognized in there is the cultural element. There are still a lot, even though soccer has skyrocketed in the United States, there's still a big bulk of the population that culturally don't take soccer seriously.
Oh yeah, most definitely. There's a
big bulk, and because of that, there is, at least right now, there is still a financial ceiling for soccer.
Yeah. I mean, let's just talk right here in Richmond, where, like, middle school soccer is literally played with pickup rules and is like, all right, coaches, you can ref the game and the field can be any size you want it to be as long as there's two goalposts. But the goals might not have nets, but you can use a basketball as a soccer ball. You know, like,
yeah, basically.
But you're right in that aspect of, like, it's not taken serious, and that's the detriment to the women's sports, because when the 94 World Cup came here for the men, like, one of the things they had to do was, like, FIFA told them, like, you have to have a men's league. I forget what the time period was, but it was like, you have to have a men's league. And the fact that when the 99 World Cup came here 5 years after the fact, it was like no one even thought about mentioning, like, hey, we're giving you the World Cup. We want you. It was like FIFA wanted the women's soccer to be the face. You can tell they wanted women's soccer to be the face. They won the World Cup, and I think in 95, right? They won 95, right?
99.
No. When 99 was the first one? You sure?
99 was, I think, the first women's World Cup that USA hosted.
Oh, I mean, not host, but I'm saying they won 95.
Yes,
95. Even though 95 wasn't labeled as a World Cup, it should have been, but that's a different story for a different day. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, they wanted U.S. soccer to be the face. Why not just be like, hey, you got to have a women's league in place? You already laid the groundwork with MLS, but to your point, they didn't take it serious.
They didn't take it serious, and also you have to think about it this way. FIFA is looking at the United States like, you guys are going to host the World Cup in 99. USA, even though they don't have a functioning league, in terms of women's soccer, are still more advanced than the rest of the world. So it's not. Yeah. So basically, FIFA could come to the USSF and say, look, 94, you're hosting the World Cup. You need to have a league. The English top division is already there. La Liga's already there. Serie A's already there. Bundesliga's already there. All of these leagues, the Brazilian league, the Mexican league, all of these leagues are already established. It's like, okay, if you want to host the World Cup, you need to at least have a league. Now, with the women's in 99, it's like, you want to host the World Cup? You guys have the most popular teams. So, yeah, go ahead and host the World Cup league. Now, you don't need to have a league. No one else has one, you know? So...
It's
frustrating, and it makes you realize. I mean, when you see the way these players played, like you know, the Christine Lillies, the Brandi Chastains, the Julie Foudies, the Breonna Scurries. Now imagine those players now. Imagine if they were coming out now with how big women's soccer is with. Alongside your Alex Morgans and your Kristen Press and your Crystal Dunns and your Megan Rapinoes.
I mean, just imagine if they had a stable league like the NWSL that just now added, like, you talk about a league that, granted, you know, had to see other leagues die out for them to survive and get it right. But you talk about a league now that just added two new franchises and a Racing Louisville and Angel City FC. Like, imagine taking those 95ers, 99ers, and putting them into the NWSL, and imagine how much that league would have grown to the heights to now. Like, oh man, it would have been amazing. It would have been amazing.
It would have. But now you start to see there are more options now. There are more options. You see Tobin Heath and Christian Press are playing for Manchester United in England. You see,
Rose Lavelle, Sam Hughes going to Man City. Yeah. The partnership with Olympic Lyon and how that's working with Seattle, and I think I saw the news today that Man City's goalkeeper, I can't remember her name, just went on loan to Olympic Lyon Rennes, and that doesn't happen 10, 15 years ago, you know, It's weird. It's kind of weird to see America be like, you got to play in America if you want to make it in soccer. Like, it's weird to see.
It is.
Because on the men's side, it's not like that.
Exactly. It's the complete opposite. It's the complete opposite with the men's game.
Like, MLS is sitting in the envy. Like, how are they doing it?
You need to leave the MLS. Like, what?
Like, Dan Garber is sitting in a corner somewhere like, how are they doing this? All right, man. Let's go. That's a great transition to her international career, which is really like the highlight of her career. So pretty much, like you said, she was the main goalkeeper from the U.S. women's team from 94 to 2008. 14 years. She was, if there was a game, her name was in the team sheet. And definitely. Like you said, her record, once again, for those who don't know, 133 wins, 12 draws, 14 losses. That includes 71 shutouts.
Yeah.
So half of her wins, more than half of her wins, she shut out people. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. She got her first start, of course, March 16th, which is coming up in a couple of days, against Portugal in 94. That was her first ever start. Ever since then, she kind of pretty much held it down. She was a member of the 96 Olympic team that won gold. She played in every game and only gave up 3 goals that tournament. In 99 World Cup, she, once again, only gave up 3 goals, but she had 4 shutouts in this tournament. And also, she had the most important save in U.S. soccer history when she saved a penalty against China. Hey, let me ask you this. Have you seen the video of her penalty save?
Oh, I watched it live.
I swear she was at the 6-yard box. By the time the ball was kicked, she was at the 6-yard box.
Yeah, this is before you had to stand on your line.
Yo.
This is before she had to stand on your line. But that was her, I remember that was kind of her technique for saving PKs. She always, as the player would run up, she'd take a hop forward to close the angle down a little bit more so that she could reach to whichever side the player went. But the thing is, to be able to do that, it requires a lot of quickness and a lot of agility to be able to get that hop forward and then spring left or right. So, I mean, she was I remember that save. She came jumping out and just dove.
Man, so, of course, you know, I was a newbie to soccer, so I'm watching the highlights in college and stuff, and I'm seeing the save, and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I remember the Nike commercial with her. It was a Nike commercial. I think it was around 02 or 03. I can't remember when. But I remember seeing the commercial and her just going to her knees and just shaking her fist. And I was like, yo, that's U.S. soccer. And it also brings up this point about how, because it's kind of similar to what Crystal Dunn is going through now, about how she should have been the face of U.S. soccer. And Brianna Scurry had a legitimate point. She talks about it in an article about how she wanted to be the face of U.S. soccer, but she knew that the position that she played, she was never going to be the face.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, it was never going to put the shine on her. And it's kind of similar to what Crystal Dunn is going through. Now, that Crystal Dunn, don't get me wrong, we did a whole episode on her. Check it out. Episode 5. It's a great episode. You listen to all our episodes. But she plays a left back, but she's an amazing attacker. Like the game against Brazil where she by herself shut down the left-handed side, but generated multiple attacks. But she also talked about before, in a, I think it was a Forbes article, about how she wants to be the face of U.S. soccer. But you can see, you know, U.S. soccer kind of this thing of where they're whitewashing and kind of putting, like, the prototypical player up and not showing the real heartbeat of the team.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You see that a lot in professional soccer, period. You look, for example, I'm going to throw out a few examples. You look at that, at today, the women's team, you see that work that Crystal Dunn performed, but who gets the acclaim? Megan Rapinoe, because she's whipping in crosses. Alex Morgan, because she's scoring goals left and right. Back then it was Mia Hamm, you know, yeah. Mia Hamm was the face of women's soccer. Of women's soccer, period, not just U.S. soccer. She was the face of women's soccer. She was in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Okay, so even now today, you look at let's say for example Liverpool right now. The heartbeat of that Liverpool team is who?
Oh, it's Van Dijk.
Oh, well, Jordan okay. Henderson. Jordan yeah, Henderson true. Is the heartbeat of that team. Who gets the acclaim? Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane. The heartbeat of
well, it's good to see two people of color get the recognition they deserve.
I mean, that's what I thought you was going with. It's always going to be the player that scores the goals. It's always going to be the flashiest player. It's always going to be for Leicester. It was Jamie Vardy and Riyad Mahrez. But the heartbeat of that team was N'Golo Kanté. If no N'Golo Kanté, no party. So, I mean, so. So, I mean, it you see, and you see they didn't really kind of get close to that level of success until Ndidi really came into form. And because that's where the heartbeat is. Yeah, and when you have, it's only as the game started to develop and knowledge of the game started to develop that you get people becoming recognized like David De Gea, like Ter Stegen, even though he's playing along on the same team as Lionel Messi and Suarez and players like that, Manuel Neuer, Tim Howard, it took the game developing in terms of people's intellect towards the game to a certain level before people could say, oh yeah, the goalkeeper is important too, you know. The goalkeeper was always, the one in the back who stops the shots, but the one we want to see is the one who's scoring goals.
But also at that time, I mean, also I don't think U.S. soccer was never in a position to where, let's be real, they wanted to put a black woman as the face of U.S. soccer. They wanted to be and this is something we've always talked about, how they wanted soccer to be this suburban, white, you know, upper-class sport. And they didn't, you know, they never really put investment into it. Yeah. And everyone to put their investment in her.
As, like I said, the typical suburbia family, the daughter plays soccer, the son plays football or baseball. And so that's the type of people they were trying to cater to. And that's, I mean, to be honest with you, even though she was an amazing player, Mia Hamm fit the mold for that perfectly.
Yeah,
and I mean, and so, I mean, at the end of the day, there are so many factors it was going to be nearly impossible for Breonna Scurry to be the face of U.S. soccer. Although she finally did get her recognition, I would say 3 years ago.
Yeah.
With being the first black player to be inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. She did, and that's a pretty cool. Like, it's good to see that she got her recognition and flowers.
The thing is, she had been eligible since 2014.
Which, by the way, like the soccer federation, correction, Shanair, she was the first woman goalkeeper, black woman to be elected into the Soccer Hall of Fame. I had to correct you there for a second.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I know.
Point one for Elliot.
When I said it, I was like, wait a minute.
That don't sound right. All you know, we get angry emails from our listeners and be like, you don't know nothing about women's soccer. We're sorry. But this is a funny story. So after 99, I told you, I had a cool fact for you. Uh-huh. After 99 World Cup, she actually thought about going to the WNBA and playing in the WNBA. She was going to be the next, like Deion Sanders, Bo Jackson. Like, she was going to be that multi-sport athlete. And 100, I honestly think, now don't get me wrong, like, I'm not someone that believes that, like, LeBron James can play professional basketball. I mean, play professional soccer. He, of course, can play professional basketball. I don't believe that. I do, however, believe
I really hate the argument that people put towards that, because it's like,
and we're not going to start this argument there because we'll be here all night. There's nothing positive to come from us talking about that. But I do believe that on a media level, like, the W would have been like, hey, new league, look at this. Look at this goalkeeper we got. She just won a World Cup. She's one of the top athletes. Like, it's something to where, like, could she have played? Who knows? Like, the skill set probably wasn't there. You know, it's almost the same thing as, like, Usain Bolt trying to play soccer in the 80s. Could he have done it? Eh, who knows? But was everyone talking about it for Dortmund? No. And he was on the training team. He wasn't about to pay for them for serious. The only reason why he sat on the bench one time.
He sat on the bench one time.
But, like, let's be real about it. Like, the media hype that would have happened around it, it probably would have generated some buzz. But that is, like, interesting, the fact that, like, she could have been the first, like, Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, multi-level athlete, which I would have loved. She's blocking shots off the glass and blocking goals, baby. That's what she does.
Yup.
I think we're going to title this episode the What If Bo Jackson. Like, we could have named this episode about her, about being that. Oh, my God. Yeah, because now I'm thinking about it. All right. Let's get back on track. So, she was a part of the World Cup squad, which the U.S. finished third in. That was 03. Also, tip point, that's also where we have Amy Wambach make her appearance. 04, we got the Summer Olympics, the U.S. wins. But this is kind of like her last big tournament. 04 was like her last big tournament. Because in 07, she only plays two matches in that World Cup. I don't really know why. I don't know if it was injury. I don't know if it was because we want to work someone else in. But the USA finished third in that World Cup. And then she was the backup keeper and made no appearances in the 08 Olympics because Hope Solo, that's when Hope Solo gets started up in 08. And that's pretty much it. After 08, you know, of course she has the career injury, the career-ending injury with the concussion in 09, when she goes on preseason with the Washington Freedom. And then 2011, she just moves up to the front office. My bad. She goes up to GM for the Washington, for the Magic Jacks. Do you remember them?
No, I didn't. I didn't remember. When I saw that, I was like, Magic Jacks, who was that? But no, I didn't remember.
So I remember in college, me and a couple of friends, we were just, you know, of course, you know, it's a Saturday afternoon in the dorm. You don't got nothing to do. So we were just flipping through the channel, and this game came across. It was Boston Breakers versus Magic Jacks. And we were like, and this is when, like, we saw the Magic Jack commercials. And we was like, did the TV commercial sponsor a team? Like, I was seriously here, like, mind blown for like 20 minutes. And I couldn't even tell you who was playing. All that I remember was trying to figure out, like, how much money did this commercial pay to have a sports team named after them? Not like it's the team nickname, nothing. Like, their name is the Magic Jacks.
Yep.
And I'm like, what? Like, imagine telling someone, like, yo, I'm a supporter of Magic Jack. What? Like, hey, I'm not taking you serious. No. And you can see how quickly that league went. Like how Magic Jack did. Magic Jack was around literally for like 1 year. I remember the commercials. It was around for 1 year. And then after that, it went
down. Yeah, that was it.
And then that's another women's league that died off. But like we said, like they ended off 2017. She was named the first assistant coach for the Washington Spirit and was a technical advisor for the Spirit programs in Maryland and Virginia. So, and then, of course, she gets the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And that's how it is, man. She definitely got her respects afterwards, but it's kind of sad to see that her playing career kind of went the way how it did. You know, it wasn't as if she kind of played these consistent career. I know as an athlete, it sucks when your career gets cut short by injury and you can't really go back and rewrite your story. Like Charles Barkley, for instance, when he got his Achilles injury in Houston, he literally worked the entire offseason just to come back to play one more game for the Houston so he could go off the field the way how he wanted to. Yeah. And it sucks that Beyonce Curry never got that chance, you know?
Yeah, it does. But, you know, and that's the thing with sports. A lot of times, I mean, there's always going to be somebody else. And that's one thing you see a lot of players fall by the wayside because they got the injury at the wrong time. And that person that they bring in ends up taking off. I mean, to be honest with you, Tom Brady is a perfect example. You know, Tom Brady comes into the Patriots team because Drew Bledsoe gets injured, and Tom Brady becomes the new star. And Drew Bledsoe.
I feel like that's the only football fact you probably know.
No, I know more than that. Come on, give me some credit.
I'm just saying, it's someone that like gets bored after 5 minutes of watching a football game. I'm surprised you even remember that.
Oh, no, I remember that because I remember watching that Super Bowl when the first of Tom Brady's dynasty.
But also, Matt, I just want to say this. If either me or you have a daughter, I'm making sure she plays goalkeeper because the longevity of a U.S. women's national team goalkeeper is like once you get the job, it is yours. Like no one is taking it from you.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You can do that because, I mean, look, you know the Keep Calm t-shirts?
Yeah.
There is a t-shirt that goes out there among soccer moms that says, "I can't keep calm. My child is a goalie." There is a stress level that no other parent of a player can reach that goalkeeper parents reach. Because when your child is the last line of defense, your blood pressure goes through the roof.
No blood, no foul, baby. No blood, no foul.
Oh, man. Oh. I mean, coaching, just watching. You can always see who's the parents of the goalkeeper because they're the nervous wreck over on the other side.
Like, what are you doing? I think this is a good point to wrap up this podcast, man. I think Breonna Scurry's journey is definitely one that it definitely brings to the forefront about goalkeeper issues. Like we talked about in this episode, the pay for women's leagues, the pay for women players, the domestic leagues, you know, also talking about some of the legends because without Kim Crabb, we don't have Breonna Scurry. And without Breonna Scurry, we don't have the development of what U.S. soccer goalkeepers have become and been known for. We don't have those generational black players coming in to breaking down their doors and playing in women's soccer. So I think Breonna Scurry's legacy and perspective is one of which is she was the forefront. It was the eyes for black people, you know, black women kind of seeing like, well, dang, she in it. I can do it. You know, it's kind of she was that door for black women getting into the sport and then dominating the sport. Like, for instance, we have Dennis Rodman's daughter playing for the women's national team, which I love. I absolutely love it. And I'm about to spend $80 on a Rodman jersey, and I'm praying to God she gets her dad's, like, Chicago Bulls number on it.
Oh,
and I'm, yeah. This is me personally, like, a small part of me wish there was, like, a Detroit NWSL team and that Trinity Rodman played for that team, so we could just start the Bad Boys or the Bad Girls again. Marketing. I'm telling you, dog, I'm on it. All right, I'm going to stop before I open up Pandora's box, and we'd be on here for another 50 minutes. I think our listeners have enjoyed this episode. Just want to let you guys know, we have a couple of more crossover episodes coming out, so keep on the eyes for that with For the Culture and, of course, the Banner Pub. So keep out for those guys. Anything else you, Shaneer, before we wrap up?
No, I think it's time to wrap up because I hear my son screaming dada. So
it's time to go get paid. All right, listeners. Yeah. Well, of course, you can follow the show at River City 93. We thank you guys always for listening to our podcast. If you want to become a supporter of our podcast, you can do so for the low, low fee of $3.99. And if you want to put some money towards it, we'll always love you forever. But if you want to support our podcast, we like money. We can use money. We need your rights. If you want to support our podcast, you can do so at the link down below, or you can reach out to us on Twitter at RiverCity93. As always, this is Elliot.
This is Shaneer.
And we'll holler at you guys later. We'll take you guys in the next side.